Welcome to the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast, the nationally recognized preferred provider for asset protection and tax planning in the nation. This show is for real estate investors looking to protect their assets, save on taxes, and build their wealth with Clint Coons. Clint is an attorney, author, avid real estate investor, and featured instructor at Anderson's tax and asset protection events held throughout the country. Enjoy the show.
Welcome, everyone. Hi, it's Clint Coons here from Anderson Business Advisors, and this is another episode of our weekly podcast. And in this episode, I wanted to come to you with something that's been in the Wall Street. It's actually been in a lot of publications, national news. It's a form of real estate investing that, you know, a lot of people made tremendous returns in this area of investing over the last several years. And now we've kind of hit this, I would say, why in the road as to where we're going to take it. If you're not familiar with this type of investing, what I'm referring to, if you haven't figured it out yet, it is short-term rentals. I myself have had a short-term rental property for a time in Hawaii, and I found it wasn't for me. But I sold that property to an individual who had several other properties there, and I, you know, occasionally went back, monitored what they're doing with it. And I could see they knew how to run the business. And that's really what it comes down with any real estate, knowing how to treat it as a business. Well, I thought with this episode, we would talk to one of the experts in the field when it comes to short-term rentals, a Airbnb style investing. He's a good friend of mine. I've known him for many years, and I've been on his podcast. We've worked together to help people structure it properly. So this is the expert, and I'm glad to have him on. His name is Richard Fertig. Richard, thank you for coming on.
Clint, thank you so much. And to all the listeners, I really appreciate your time and interest. And Clint, I would love to get a better sense for why it wasn't for you, because there's probably some listeners that may come across some of the same challenges. And, you know, if they could avoid it and get into a good investment, great. But if I can also add insight as to how to overcome some of those challenges, perhaps it could be in what's a great investment for many.
That's a great way to start off in this. And I think I know what it is. I didn't have the education. I didn't know what I was doing. I thought this is something I'm just going to dabble in. And I think that happens a lot for people. They think I'm going to try something, it fails. And so they assume that it's not for them and they never go back and try it again. And really, you know, the problem was with me not understanding what I was doing because I didn't get educated.
Right. And so that's actually a great segue. I started Short-Term Rental University because I was experimenting with the Airbnb platform. This is now 5 or 6 years ago. I found it really interesting and amazing what kind of return I was generating relative to, say, a long-term rental, say a 12-month rental. And so I really started to dig down a little bit deeper. And what I realized was that I was in the process of creating a portfolio of assets, lifetime legacy assets in places that I wanted to go visit. And basically, other people were paying my mortgage and then some. So if I was able to do this, say for 15 years, those were the tenure of the mortgages that I had at the time. If I could do it for 15 years, then I would earn it out, own it outright, and people would continue to pay me and we'd cash flow. So once I realized that vision and that opportunity, I created the Short-Term Rental University YouTube channel to educate individuals about what to do and what not to do, what mistakes we're all going to fall prey to and how to avoid them. And then ultimately how to run a successful business. And that's really what it comes down to, right? So it really works very well for two different types of individuals. And one isn't better than the other. You just have to know what type of individual you are. So my girlfriend's father, for instance, got started and he loves the hands-on. He loves meeting with the guests. He loves telling them about the neighborhood and what's going on. And that's, you know, where he is in his life. It gives him a sense of purpose and satisfaction and pride and joy. For me personally, I take a totally different approach and I automate as much as I possibly can. I outsource everything and then I scale. And consequently, I have to figure out how to have a personality and a relationship with these individuals while not doing it myself.
Yeah. See, that I think is key. You said a number of things there that we can unpack. Number one, you like to go to those places. I've seen your place in Wyoming. You're in North Carolina right now. We're talking about you have places all over the country that are desirable locations that you yourself would want to stay. Biggest mistake I think I made is that the property I bought in Maui, I wouldn't stay there. It's not an area of Hawaii that I want to go. In the Kaanapali area, I like the Big Island. I like other places. So we never stayed there. Right. And so that's important. And what you also said, I just clued into, was that there's two different personalities. There's the person that wants to engage with the tenants and talk to them, tell them all about the area. Not my personality to want to do that. But then it was needing to set up the business side of it, the automation. And I never fully invested myself, learned how to do that. And so I was just kind of treating it like I do my rentals, you know, thinking that I could get by that way. And that's important. I mean, if you can go into more of that aspect of it, of how people should approach it, I think it'd be enlightening for them.
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say the following. I was attracted to the short-term rental space because it has the single largest rate of return out of all real estate investments that I've reviewed. And for those of you who don't know me and my background, I used to run a $4 billion hedge fund. I'm constantly looking all over the world for value and opportunity. I like to get there earlier and before other people. And, you know, commensurate with that risk is also higher reward. So that's what attracted me to the short-term rental space. And many of those things exist today, although we've matured quite a bit. Airbnb is about to go public. There's hundreds of thousands of hosts all over the world. So the competition has increased. That said, you can still do incredibly well. The key thing is to know what it is that you want to do and what space you want to occupy. It's like that in every single business. So for instance, if you try to appeal to everybody with a very generic home and a very generic listing and neutral colors, and it's in the middle of nowhere, suburbia, plain vanilla, it doesn't offend anyone. The flip side is it doesn't excite anyone either, right? And so you're going to have to compete on price. Everything that I do, I try and find a niche, and then I charge a premium for that, because once I attract my tribe, they want what I have. I'm the only one doing that. They'll pay a premium for it. And the key thing in this business that doesn't exist in many of the other real estate businesses is there's this trust and review process from your peers where guests rate hosts and hosts rate guests. And believe it or not, studies have shown scientifically that people trust those anonymous reviews as much as somebody who they know and respect telling them the same thing. So for instance, somebody saying, hey, Clint Kunz has a great podcast, you should really go listen to it, and coming from someone's brother has a lot of meaning. But when you read the reviews about Clint Kunz's podcast and they're also positive, people value that just as much, even though they have no idea who left the review. So the key thing to the short-term rental university teaching is about knowing what it is that you're trying to do, differentiate yourself, delight your guests so that they give you 5-star reviews, and that's your marketing. And then it just propels in a positive fashion.
So what I got out of it, because a lot of people, they saw this as an opportunity to make quick money, easy, well, I wouldn't say easy money, but to make more than they would off a normal property. And they were buying properties in, you know, just some normal area like downtown Tacoma or Silverdale, Washington, not desirable locations. I mean, you're buying, you know, in places where people want to go, or people with means especially would want to go. So has that kind of been your niche then?
Yeah. So I think that the key thing about real estate, and this should come as no surprise to anybody who's listening to this podcast and interested in real estate, is location, location, location. So you always want to buy the best location that you can afford. And when you overlay the short-term rental thesis on top of it, in an ideal world, you're not the only person who wants to go to that location. There's reasons that people are coming to those locations anyway. So I'll give you a real life example. I'm sitting here in the Outer Banks of North Carolina. 2 years ago, the Outer Banks of North Carolina was on sale. Nobody was coming here. Nobody was buying. There was an old bridge making the access to North Carolina Outer Banks safe. And during storms, you couldn't get on the island or off the island. Well, I realized, and so too did many other people, but they didn't act on it, that the state of North Carolina just invested $700 million, has built a world-class bridge that they're guaranteeing for 100 years. And so my thesis 2 years ago was, once there's safe passage here, this island is 87% national park. They're not making any more islands. 87% of it is national park. Something like 3 million visitors come here during summer vacation, and there's no new lodging. So I'm in the process right now. I think I'm the single largest landowner in the area. We own 50 acres of waterfront property that we're developing into single family vacation rentals for people to come and enjoy something new and modern. Now, is it risky? Yes. But are people coming to the Outer Banks of North Carolina and Hatteras Island specifically? Yes, by the millions. Has COVID accelerated that? Yes. While I don't want COVID for anybody and it's a terrible tragedy, it's been a real boom for our business because we were positioned correctly in advance of the herd.
Okay, so you brought up COVID. If you read, like I said, the Wall Street, you listen to the media, they said that a lot of people that started with Airbnb are in a tough bind. Maybe this is, they were referring to a couple of months ago, where they couldn't meet their mortgage because they couldn't cover it because of the restrictions that Airbnb was placing on tenants coming into the property, the turnover time, 72 hours. So, how is that impacting you, and where do you see that going forwards for the next, you know, year?
What I would point listeners to is go check out my YouTube channel, watch the videos that we filmed in late February and into early March as COVID came out, listen to the predictions that I made then, and then fast forward to where we are today. And a lot of them, most of them, are extremely accurate. So what I've been teaching on the channel for years is about location, 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 but in the right places for vacation rentals. So what a lot of people were doing was second nature to them, and they thought it was less risky. And what do I mean by that? If they had a successful Airbnb and it's, let's say, their primary home in Tacoma, to use your example, they're doing well, it's cash flowing. Well, I want to scale. I want to improve my business. I want to have more. So what do? They got the unit right next to them, down the hall or above them or below them. And so they concentrated all of their risk into what seemed safe or convenient or easy to do. But the challenge with that is that that's actually a lot more risk than diversifying and having places. All of my places I run remotely. I'm not on location for any of them. I build a scalable business with a team behind me so that I can operate a place in Crested Butte, Colorado, Costa Rica, Outer Banks, Jackson Hole, Alabama, and it goes on and on. It doesn't matter where I am, but I pick locations where people want to go to. I diversify the risk. I run them remotely. And what that has allowed me to do is pick really world-class vacation spots. And I've fortunately been selling out of urban areas and going into more rural vacation, beach, ski, places where people want to go and spend vacation dollars. Now, that traveler is more discretionary, right? So like if times get really bad and we go into a recession, one of the things that gets cut back is vacation spend. But I try and do it personally for my niche. Again, where I want to stay, I'm at the higher end of the market. And so people in that category have means through good times and bad, and they value experiences. What we found through COVID right now, to address your question about the Wall Street Journal and others saying that a lot of people had a hard time, there was a ton of uncertainty. We didn't know what this was going to look like. We didn't know if people would be able to travel or when they could resume traveling. But I made a prediction back in March, and it's on the YouTube channel. I said, when we come out of this thing, and I think it's a couple of months away, we're going to have so much pent-up demand that I predict if you're in the right locations, you could have your best year ever. And that's actually what's happening. So if you take a look at the more recent articles, the proper locations on Airbnb and VRBO are having our best year ever. Our prices are through the roof. Our occupancy is as high as it could possibly be. We are, the responsible hosts are leaving people little windows so that it's not back to back, and we've enhanced our cleaning so it's nice and safe. But if you're positioned properly, this is possibly the best thing that's happened to vacation rentals in remote areas where there's not a lot of crowding. People can get away with their loved ones and family and relax and enjoy and realize that like life goes on and people are flocking to them.
Okay, so let's assume that I've always wanted a house in Jackson. I know how much they cost to get something more that I'd want to stay in. What do they look at then? If you're going to borrow to buy one of these types of properties and you're going into the bank, do you position it as a short-term rental property and you use projected income to help qualify for that? Because I'm just thinking about the individual, the investor that's listening to this, and they're liking what they're hearing, but they're thinking, how am I going to afford a house in the Outer Banks that is in that desirable location?
So there's a variety of different ways to do it. And when I first got started, I had to qualify based on my own income, and it was a vacation home. And then over time, I would change the vacation home into a vacation rental. that I would still go use. As I've scaled and gotten bigger and the industry has matured, there are now what's known as non-QM loans, where the underwriter isn't underwriting Richard the individual or Clint the individual. They're underwriting the asset and its earnings. So they're looking at it as if you're buying a business, and there's tons of data. There's a company out there called AirDNA, where you can literally put in an address and it'll project what the rental income is. And it's about 95% accurate or something like that. I have no affiliation with them. I don't even get a commission or anything. So I don't know what their exact accuracy is, but my team and I always go by gut. I have a very strong intuition about what works. And then I use that as a sanity check and double check it. And then I make sure that that covers my DSCR, my debt service coverage ratio, which is what the underwriters are going to look at. So if you put down, say, 20% to buy that $100,000 home, you finance 80%. What is the mortgage payment? What is the taxes? What is the insurance? And as long as the rental income covers all of that, you can get a loan in the non-QM market, whether you have income yourself to support it or not.
Okay, so right now, if I was interested in this, what area should I be looking at, would you say, in the country?
That's a very good question, because the real estate market, as many people would have bet against, has rallied to levels that we haven't seen, and the demand is unprecedented. Again, you have that pent-up demand. There was no real estate sales for, say, a quarter, and then when people came out, there was a lot of pent-up demand that was just buying everything. But the areas that are really in focus, and what I like to think about COVID is it didn't really change the trajectory of the world. All it did was accelerate it. Whatever trends were happening before, this hyper-accelerated it. So if you think of the businesses that have suffered the most, for instance, restaurants, it's a very low-margin business. It's a very competitive business. It serves a great purpose, and you know, it's quite satisfying to own a restaurant and to dine in a restaurant, but it is a very hard business. And that business is having the most difficult time through COVID. It's just accelerated the challenges. The flip side of it is some trends that we've been seeing historically, and I've been betting on these and positioning myself for these, is about quality of life, experience over luxury, things that are memorable, things with loved ones, things that you can Instagram. So it's all about experience and sharing that with loved ones. And the places that are doing incredibly well during COVID are new, unique. People haven't been there. They haven't seen them before. Everyone wants that first Instagram shot. Everyone wants to discover it. And so in a nutshell, what I would encourage your listeners to do is to think about places that they would love to go that are off the beaten path. Maybe they're on their bucket list. Maybe they're hard to get to and you have to take two planes. You know, the reasons that like you didn't go there before are now the reasons to go there. Mm-hmm. And so you can go find places that other people haven't looked at and find great opportunities. Here in the Outer Banks of North Carolina, we are still trading below 2004 highs, maybe as much as 50% below. That's very rare in the United States anyway. So if real estate traded in 2004, let's just pick a number, $100,000. The Outer Banks right now, you can still buy things at $50,000 or $60,000. Whereas in most parts of the country, we're at all-time highs and going higher. And so now you're picking something at the all-time high. Go try and find a place that's really remote, that is really desirable, that doesn't have a ton of competition, and try and find a place that you would like to go, because then if you're wrong, you have a wonderful vacation home and you can go enjoy it yourself and it's all about experiences, but chances are you'll be right.
All right, so if you're looking for that property, is there some general guidelines? I mean, it needs to be at least 4 bedrooms. It has to have this many bathrooms, garages, or you know, within so close to an airport or something like that?
It really depends on budget. I can tell you what I do personally. I focus on the higher end and the bigger stuff, and I take the risk that many people aren't comfortable. You know, I'll buy a multi-million dollar place and bet that people will spend whatever, $3,000 a night, $4,000 a night. The average listener is not going to do that, nor should they to get started. But the one thing that I would say is people really care a lot about bathrooms. So don't go and get a discount and be like, well, I got a 4-bedroom, but it's got 2 baths. People are going to choose something that has a 4-bedroom and 4 baths. So if you can't afford the same number of bathrooms as bedrooms, then just go smaller. Get a 3-bedroom, 3-bath. Get a 2-bedroom, 2-bath. But try and avoid that, think about it. People are on vacation. They're having a good time. They don't really want to wait to shower. They don't really want to wait for somebody to come out of the bathroom and then go in. So try and get the number of bathrooms consistent with the number of bedrooms. Whether people need it or not is irrelevant. That's just the way that they search on the Airbnb and other places.
So then if I'm looking for a spot, typically are you going to buy these properties where you anticipate you have to do some rehab work, or do you try to get them where there's no work really involved other than maybe some paint?
Again, it depends on the individual and their level of comfort. If you've never done a renovation and that's not your business, let's say you're an accountant and you work at the desk and you're now buying a place, try and make it turnkey. Don't learn a whole new trade and start hiring contractors and electricians and taking time off work, right? This is supposed to be value add to your life and to your income. It's not supposed to be a distraction. And by the way, it doesn't have to be perfect, right? Like everything will clear at a certain price. So if you buy a fixer-upper, rent it out for a year, two, or three, and just get less income and don't worry about it. Your basis is lower too because you haven't taken $50,000 or $100,000 and renovated it.
Yeah.
But try and find something that's unique. And so what I mean by that is find that really remote cabin that's deep in the woods but has an insane view. Try and find something that has an architectural interest. It's a tree house. It's a modern design and everything else is, you know, whatever, traditional. Try and differentiate yourself because then you're no longer competing with all the other people. But what most people do is they just go for something that like fits everybody, fits their price point. By the way, it fits every other Airbnb host price point and fits all of their needs too. And so chances are you're overpaying for it. But where you find tremendous value is you go and you find something that's a little off the beaten path, a little bit different size, a little bit eclectic. Maybe it's funky, maybe it's fun, maybe it like doesn't matter what it is, but don't look for like, I hate condo investing. Don't buy an Airbnb in a building where there's 300 other people competing with you.
That's what I did.
Well, don't do that.
Oh, I know that now.
You know what I mean? Like, how are you? Yeah. The only thing you're doing at that point is you're competing on price.
Mm-hmm. I noticed that too. So that was one of the things. I'd look at VRBO and I was always trying to put the price bands in there based upon what other people were doing in that same area.
So what ends up happening is then you start to compete on price because you're not getting booked. So you drop your price $10 or $20 and you get a booking. But I teach people to do the exact opposite. Find something really interesting and then price it at a premium and attract your tribe and you're much more profitable and it's okay. You know, one of the other mistakes that many people make is they view occupancy as sort of the KPI, the key performance indicator, whether they're doing well or not. So if you're like at 100% occupancy, you're doing really well. And anything below that means that you're not doing well. Well, that's kind of silly if you think about it, because I can guarantee you, Clint, I can guarantee you 100% occupancy. It's no problem. I don't know where you are right now. It looks really nice. It's got a wine cellar and maybe it's your office or something. But if you wanted to rent that thing out and you wanted 100% occupancy, I guarantee you if you put it on Airbnb and you charged $1, you'd be sold out.
Yep.
But are you profitable? Are you fulfilled? Has it done anything for you? So the right way to do this is in today's world, we use dynamic pricing, just like airplanes and hotels. And we change every single one of our units pricing every single day based on supply and demand in our immediate vicinity. And I always like to price higher than everyone else, as I've indicated, because it's more profitable. And I'm okay having 20 or 30% vacancy. Because even with 20 or 30% vacancy, at my price point, I'm more profitable than 100% occupancy at a lower price point. There's less wear and tear. It gives us days between people for turnover. We can go and have maintenance people go in on those days. And so overall, it just runs much more smoothly and more profitably.
You know, anybody listening in right now can tell what you're talking about, that's the experience of someone who's actually in the business that's doing it. Because these little nuggets that you're throwing out there that I hope people are writing down and paying attention to, there's a lot of people that teach this stuff, but they don't do it. And I've listened to a ton of them. And there's a big difference on when you get on and you start talking about this. And so I hope people go, where was that link again where they can get more information?
So go to Short Term Rental University. That's our YouTube channel, STRU. We also have a Facebook group with 22,000 hosts from all over the world peer-to-peer. People ask, hey, this happened to me. How would you handle it? Because when you're first getting started in particular, every situation is new. Hey, someone checked in late. Someone checked in early. Someone wants to check in late. Someone wants to check out early. You know, there's all this uncertainty. And so we've created this tremendous, completely free community where hosts share. We don't view each other as competitors because we're not. And so it's just a great place to learn and hang out. And I'll just give you an example, because my girlfriend's father, who I mentioned earlier, he always wanted to have a house in Lake Tahoe. That was his dream. His dream was like his kids come home for Christmas and everyone's around the big table and it's snowing outside. You can have your own dream. Maybe it's at the beach or at the lake. It doesn't matter. But he didn't think he could afford it, right? He was semi-retired and the vacation home was outside of his owners. And so learning, he started doing some diligence on me, like, hey, who's my daughter dating? What is this YouTube guy? Like, what is this all about? Airbnb. And so he started watching some of the videos. Yeah. And before you know it, he got really interested and inquisitive. And when I met him the first time, about the second or third day, we started talking about his dream and his vision and what he wanted to do. And I shared with him the numbers. We ran the numbers on AirDNA. And I said, look, you know, I think this thing could be profitable. Worst case scenario, it breaks even. But like the worst case scenario, do you have any budget that you could throw towards a vacation rental? Like if this thing doesn't work out and I'm just totally wrong and it costs you whatever, $500 a month, could you live with that? Maybe you can't live with $3,000 a month, but could you live with a little bit? And he was like, yeah, totally. That makes perfect sense. So we helped him get started. He watched a bunch of videos. He went and found a place, again, unique, different than everyone else. He totally loves being there, as I said earlier. It's been in his semi-retirement, like his pride and joy, and it's something that he looks forward to, and it's incredibly successful. It's cash flowing. Not only is it paying the mortgage, but it's actually profitable. And just yesterday, I got an alert from him that the same person booked 5 different reservations this winter. So wow. The same group is coming back 5 different times. He found his tribe. He priced it properly at a premium so that they know what they're getting. And the challenge with pricing at a premium is just this. You have to deliver, right? Like once you're at that stratosphere, people don't mind paying more than they have to, but you have to over-deliver. So I put the burden on us and our hosts that we teach to delight the guests, to make them keep coming back. And that's the perfect example. They went from, I don't think I can do this, it's not going to cash flow, to he has his dream. And by the way, we're going there at Christmas and the snow's going to be falling. And so like his life is fulfilled and he's getting paid for it and he gets to use it when it's not rented.
Okay.
So it changed lives.
Jackson Hole, Sun Valley, which one?
Well, for me, Jackson Hole, because as you know, Wyoming is a tax-free state mm-hmm. and it has no estate taxes. And so if you're going to own someplace and not, by the way, I'm a very big, as I started earlier, I'm a very big believer in sort of macro trends. And for me, while inequality is unjust and it's only getting worse in this country, that divide is going to continue for the foreseeable future. And so I think you're going to see a huge continuation of people leaving high tax states like New York and California and going to places like Wyoming, Texas, Tennessee, Florida, places that have no state taxes are just absolutely on fire. And I think that continues.
What was the worst investment you ever made then in this space? And why?
So I made an investment about 12 years ago. So it was pre-Airbnb, although VRBO was alive back then. And I actually just exited. It took a pandemic for a buyer to actually come buy this thing off my hands. So that was in the Hamptons of New York. And it was a charming 1830s home with really wide planks and uneven floors. And if it was in the town of Southampton, people would have paid millions of dollars for it because it has that certain mystique and allure, but like only in that one area. The mistake that I did was I bought it in an area that I thought was up and coming. I bought an old home that kind of looked like what people wanted in Southampton. I thought people would get priced out of Southampton. There'd be some urban sprawl. They'd come to us just on the outskirts. And the exact thing that I thought would happen did not happen. Turned out no one came further away. Everyone just bid everything up in the town of Southampton. So those prices went up. And the things on the outskirts, what people wanted was brand new construction at their price point. Nobody wanted the headache and the fixer-upper and the wide plank floors and the uneven stuff that, you know, wealthy people could like look forward to getting. Yeah. I can't wait to get away from my brand new condo and go live in that, you know, antique cottage.
Charming, I think, is the word you use. Yeah,
there you go, the charming cottage. But it turns out that people on like the edge that can't really afford it. They want like the brand new vinyl siding, like hassle-free stuff. So, you know, you live and you learn.
Wow. Well, hey, I know you've given us a link. I'm going to have some information in the show notes. I know you have a special for everyone as well. They can click on those links in the show notes to get more information about this. I mean, it's just so much in the real estate arena. And as I stated earlier, Richard, you really dialed it in to a niche that can be very profitable if you know how to do it the right way and you don't take the approach I did. So it just takes a little bit of education. So I'd encourage the listeners, check it out, get the education, and best of luck with your investing. Anything else you'd like to leave?
Thank you very much for your time, Clint. It's been a real pleasure working with you over the years. And I just want to say, I've looked at all sorts of real estate investing, from industrial to retail to multifamily to single family and short-term rentals. The short-term rental space in particular, not only is it the most profitable when done properly, right? We get paid for that vacancy risk. In the multifamily world, you're basically paying up for the comfort of knowing that someone's going to cut you a check every 12 months. I'm taking that vacancy risk, but I'm getting paid that vacancy risk. Besides the cap rate, besides the return on investment, it has the opportunity to really do things for many people. And we see it all day long, where now they're doing something with their family. You can get the kids involved and they can come paint or do the lawn and they can start to learn about being an entrepreneur. Your family can vacation there when it's not being rented out. So there's a ton of benefits. It's completely flexible. You can take it on the market one day and take it off the market the next. You can go to 12-month leases. You can stop doing that. It just gives you an incredible amount of opportunity that many other real estate investments don't allow. And that flexibility is worth a premium, but it's not priced into the market yet. It's a mispriced market. It's still in the early stages.
Oh, just goes to show you, don't believe everything you read in the media, because they're not doing it. So they don't have an idea of what's really going on. And that's why I brought you on today. Thank you.
Well, Clint, thank you very much. I appreciate your time. And listeners, keep listening to Clint and be tax smart.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Have a good one.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Show notes for links to everything mentioned in this episode can be found on our website at andersonadvisors.com/podcast. Be sure you subscribe to our podcast. And if you are already a subscriber, please provide us a review of what you thought of this episode.